Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osman here for another Saturday afternoon of fun and entertainment with Tom Hsu, our very coordinated executive producer of technology, in the booth next to me.
Every single time I get a new title, and I love it.
It's you know, right off the cuff, too. We used to have a professional sports team here in town. I'm being kind of a jerk today. No, we used to have two professional sports teams. They used to win games. Yesterday was the 26th anniversary of the Twins doing what?
Oh, I do believe it would be some sort of series.
The World Series.
Ooh. I'm on the ball today.
Let's listen to some audio. This was right after Game 7 in 1987. The Twins just beat the St. Louis Cardinals.
Minnesota's News Channel and the Minnesota Twins Channel for the 1987 World Series.
Glow from all the excitement under its white top tonight. The Metrodome, the lights shine, of course, for the Twins players, but they shine for all the fans who believe in this team, believed in them through the lean years, through some hard times, some heartbreaks, some near triumphs. But by golly, they deserve to win it all tonight. Good evening, everybody. Very happy, Ruth Spencer. Happy, that's an understatement. Oh. Ecstatic couple of people up here like you are. Welcome to Twins Fever 87. We did it. My voice is leaving, and I don't care.
Me too. Let's go right down to the field to Mark Curtis to find out more about this. What's going on now, Mark?
Thanks very much, Ruth. We're standing by with Gene Larkin, and this has got to be the sweetest thing in the world, especially because there's not one hero. This is a team victory, a team effort all season long.
Okay, this group of guys have been unbelievable. You know, if you make a mistake, some guy picks you up. This happened the whole year. A tremendous ball game tonight. Very exciting ball game. Two guys throwing out the plate. I'm just happy. So happy we came out on top.
The nice thing about it is Game 7 turned out to be the best game of the series.
Hey, people said it was a boring series in the beginning, but you can't complain about the excitement in the last few games. Unbelievable. Pitching, hitting, clutch hitting, especially on our part. And, man, I can't believe I'm one of the best.
We're looking at some tape right now.
Winning games, winning championships.
I feel like I remember what that was like.
I can't confirm that. You know, I was talking to Ralph John Fritz last week, our guest here in Flashback Twin Cities, and the unfortunate thing is being young in the 80s is you thought that when the Twins won the World Series in 87 and again in 91, that's just kind of how it goes. Every few years you win a championship. Not quite the case.
I was definitely there, I think, for maybe it was Game 5 of the last World Series we won. And that's my greatest memory of the Twins.
Well, there you go. Hold on to that memory because it might be a long time before you have a better one.
Tight.
we're going to talk to Wonder Woman today.
Yes!
The real-life Wonder Woman. Well, the Wonder Woman of Super Friends.
That's cool. That's very cool.
Shannon Farnan. And this is going to be a great interview. We also have Tom Hendrick. He was a reporter at WCCO. We'll have Wonder Woman on at our... after this break here on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osman here for... next segment here, and this is actually a very special guest, one of the biggest guests we've actually ever had on Flashback Twin Cities. Our guest today, Shannon Farnan, who was the original voice of Wonder Woman. This is not Linda Carter. This is Shannon Farnan. Welcome.
Hi there, and I'm really not so big. I'm only 5'3".
We're talking big as in... oh, gosh, I'm stuck now. I can't get out of this one. We had a guest on. May I call you Shannon?
Yes, that's my name.
May I call you Tom? You may, Ms. Farnan, Shannon.
I have all sorts of different names for him.
Yeah,
if you want me to help you.
Don't listen to him. But we had a guest a few weeks ago that was the voiceover announcer at our local independent affiliate here, Channel 9 in Minneapolis. And the reason that Generation Xers, as myself, really enjoy hearing these voices is because it takes us back to childhood, to a much happier time, more innocent time, before that weight of the world kind of came onto us. And the first cartoon of the day that was here in Minneapolis on Channel 9 was Super Friends. So we,
you know, are you serious?
I'm serious. 7 a.m. every morning. You know, you can't get me up, you know, before noon on a, you know, day now if I have to. But 7 a.m. every morning, the Wood Console TV, turn on the dial of Channel 9, and there were Super Friends. And you, of course, were Wonder Woman for many years in that show. Tell me just a little bit about how you were born in Canada and did a lot of, a lot of TV and a lot of commercials. How did you end up in the role as Wonder Woman on the animated cartoon Super Friends?
You know, it's really a fun story to share because it was really totally out of the blue. Totally unexpected and not even something that I considered. Going into the cartoon business just didn't occur to me. And in itself, that's a little surprising because I always tried to do as many aspects of the entertainment business as I could. So the voiceover business was definitely on my radar. And when I decided to get into the voiceover business, it was very purposeful, other than the fact that I enjoyed doing that sort of thing. I thought, well, what a great opportunity. The day that I get pregnant, I'll just be able to keep on working with
sure.
a great big belly. Well, I actually was doing a live-action commercial for a Hanna-Barbera product called Flintstone Vitamins.
We know that.
And the direct... Pardon?
We know that product.
I never stopped taking them.
Yes, it's probably still around as far as I know. And I was just playing your nice average mommy in a nice average commercial with the children taking the vitamins. Well, my director, a wonderful man named Wally Burr, took a liking to my work, and we just enjoyed the day, and I believe it was only a day's shoot. And then all of a sudden, one day, I get a phone call from my agent saying that Hanna-Barbera would like you to come in and audition for the role of Wonder Woman. Well, every girl's dream is to be Wonder Woman.
They actually asked you just directly to come in. That's a pretty good sign.
They asked me to come in and audition. So I thought, where in the world did this come from? So I get to the studio, and the director is Wally Burr. I said to Wally, my Lord, what in the world made you think of me for the role of Wonder Woman? He said, well, I just have a feeling that you can do it, and since nobody has done it, let's just go for it. So we discussed at great length what we should go for. And through the years, at various times, we altered the direction just slightly. But basically, he said, now, the last time I worked with you, you were in a shirtwaist dress. That's a term that you're too young to understand.
I'm writing this down here, okay.
That was the typical housewife deal at that time. He said, now this time I want you to put on your boots.
Okay.
So we auditioned, or I auditioned, and he went to the networks with it, and they bought me. End of story.
And that was a long job for you. That was a 10-year job.
It was. It was 10 years. And working with some wonderful people, wonderful, talented people, and enjoying every minute of it.
You know, so often in voice work, you recognize the voice and don't know the name. And, for example, Danny Dark, who is the voice of Superman, many people
yes.
would know him as the voice of NBC and the Keebler Elves and so many other products that if you hear the voice, you instantly know it's this voice, you just don't know that name, which is, I think, an unfortunate part for voice actors.
Well, yes and no. There's a certain good thing about a little anonymity in that business, in that if you get too recognized by your voice, you will cut yourself out of other possibilities. But Danny worked so much. I mean, he had this wonderful, powerful, deep voice, and I used to love watching him work. He would hold his hand over his ear a la Gary Owen did in Laugh-In. And he literally did that. That was part of his deal so that he didn't get any feedback and everything was very clear. One of the nicest men you'd ever meet. And I'm so sorry he's no longer with us.
No, it is unfortunate. And, you know, I've been doing some research for our interview. I did a little research on Danny Dark also. And he did some of the earliest TV commercials for RCA, you know, for NBC. He was an NBC employee longer than maybe even Bob Hope. You know, he had been around a long time.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he'd been around a long time. Our guest today, Shannon Farnon. Let's, Tom, play clip number one. I want to get everyone in kind of the mode here for what we're going to talk about, Super Friends. And if you don't know what Super Friends is, it was all the DC characters, Superman, Batman, and Robin, Aquaman, and Wonder Woman, joining together to fight evil, usually through finding the good in people and joining together, being friendly. They were not called the Justice League. They were called Super Friends. It was a more friendlier time in America. Let's listen to the theme.
Right.
Great, Hera. That small plane is about to crash. Hang on. I'll have you out of there in a minute.
Ah, me out already, Wonder Woman. Now, me get you.
You'll have to catch me first, Bizarro.
Me fix you good.
I've got to telepathically summon the invisible jet before I fall. That was close. For a minute there, I thought I was finished.
You are Wonder Woman.
You did get out of it alive. It all worked out at the end.
Everything happens at the end, but it's always wonderful and a wonderful moral for the kids.
I especially love the health tips and safety tips that were on at each show. Tell me, were you a Wonder Woman comic book fan before you got the role of Wonder Woman?
As a child, surely all girls read the Wonder Woman comics because it was such a archetype, a singular archetype. There really were not a lot of women in that vein in the comics or anything else. So, yes, I did read the comics, and you do as every child does. You think, oh, wow, how wonderful to have a woman like that. But you then to find that I'm creating her voice is just at a whole other level.
And did you have an idea, I mean, prior to even getting considered for Wonder Woman or thinking about this, did you have your mind an idea reading these books? This is what I think Wonder Woman might sound like. And did you kind of have that in the back of your head when you got this very unique opportunity, which you had not even probably thought it was ever going to be an opportunity? Did you have an idea, oh yes, when I read those comic books, this is what I thought she sounded like?
You know, I didn't at the time when I was a child. I did not wonder or think about what she would sound like. But of course, the very first day on the audition, we had to come into some thinking processes pretty fast. And it was determined early to make her a super person, but not to lose femininity in the process. The Wonder Woman character was never very well delineated, even really in Super Friends. She was sort of a person who hung around the Justice League and the Hall of Justice and got into her plane when necessary. But it was just our purpose to make her a super woman, like Superman.
You know,
go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just thinking that we were always just a little on the verge of wondering, is this good for Wonder Woman, or should we be going in another direction? So the life of the role just sort of went along on its own, and every year we would meet again in the spring and do another slew of them, and just create as we went. Occasionally the director would change, and there would be a slight variation, but I doubt very many viewers would have recognized that.
In the credits, we do. Those of us that are TV geeks or TV nerds, we watch the credits, but maybe not everyone. I do have a question. You did a lot of other female voices on the show because I'm guessing you were one of the few female voices in the studio doing voiceovers.
Well, you mean in general, one of the few?
In general, because you did do Hawk Girl.
There were a lot of women doing voiceovers, but when you're hired to do a principal voice in a cartoon like that, they automatically, by contract, can give you two extra voices plus your primary voice for the price of the same ticket, the same paycheck. So because of that, yes, you do pick up little children, little boys, baseball players, French scientists.
That's right.
Evil women, you know, you get to do a whole range of characters, which is great fun.
Now, when Wonder Woman becomes evil occasionally, does that count as a second voice then, or is that the same voice?
When I listened to it today, and for some reason just recently that came up, I would have liked to have heard a little more difference.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very touch and go as to just how evil to make her. Because remember, these were the days when you were still doing nice cartoons.
This is correct.
Nice in quotes. But doing evil Wonder Woman, of course, is great fun because you're playing against yourself. But I would have liked to have seen her get a little rougher myself.
Well, you know, I think she held her own.
I recently had an opportunity to record the combination of the evil Wonder Woman and the nice Wonder Woman for a birthday gift. People can order these on my website. And I have to tell you, I really took it further than I thought I would. But they liked it. They liked it.
That, you know, I've got to be honest with you. If Tom in the studio here, if you mm-hmm. want to give me a birthday gift, Wonder Woman giving me some advice or a message would be great.
Oh, I know. I love Justice League. I am a comic book nerd over here. I'm more familiar with the 2000s Justice League.
But he's much younger than me. We have to point that out here.
Deeply, deeply. But I'm curious, because back in the period where this kind of cartoon was being made, female characters that were superheroes were more likely to not actually, say, punch or hit anybody. They would use their wits and trip the character or make them do something to themselves. Did you ever get frustrated at the fact that you couldn't be like Superman and just sort of get really rough and tumble with it?
Remember, I did have my weapons.
True.
I had my golden bracelets, and I also had my lasso.
Would they let you just get really aggressive as a as a voice?
Yeah, they did. Go for it. If you were swinging your lasso, you had to sound like you were swinging your lasso.
I have some audio. Let's listen to some more of our guest today, Shannon Farnan. Let's listen to some more Wonder Woman.
Right. It's the world's greatest super friends, Batman, Wonder Woman, and Aquaman.
My magic lasso rockets should be able to stop that missile.
I'll get the lamp. It all depends on you, Wonder Woman.
Don't worry, I know just what to do.
Battalion 4 has taken over the Zarmad Oasis, Kareem.
Excellent. Soon the entire planet will be under my command. Ah, entertainment, how thoughtful. Excellent. Guards!
Hand over the lamp, Kareem.
Your magic rope trick is quite...
You got the lamp. Rub three times for disaster. A great episode.
Saved the day once again.
Yeah, you were undercover in that one.
I listened to that, and reminds me so much of the time spent with those people. It was wonderful.
No, it was wonderful to watch, too. Two questions come to mind. Is it challenging as a voice actress versus you've done both live action and animation? For example, you've been on I Dream of Jeannie, Dallas, Love Boat, even recent programs as Passions on NBC. Is it challenging to try to envision what the action is when you're doing voiceover versus when you're actually having a scene blocked, you know, before a production.
Well, live, of course, the blocking becomes part of what makes it all so smooth. And when you're doing just the voice, you have to create all that in your head. Some of it is on the script, of course, telling you what the individual is doing. But I will say, voiceover work is just, it's more challenging in general. You're trying to really create not just the voice for someone, although it depends if it's a pretty straightforward ad. It's basically what the advertiser wants to hear, mm-hmm. the kind of person he wants selling his product. So that's pretty directed and fairly straightforward. But I had an opportunity to completely replace the voice for an actress in a show called First Monday about the Supreme Court justices. She had a physical disability happen to her voice and was a good actress, but because of this, they decided that it really wasn't going to work, that they had to replace her whole voice, the whole 13 weeks, every sound that came out of her mouth. Well, that was challenging in the sense that she was actually good. I knew her. I'd run into her on live auditions, and it was sad to see that happen to an actress who so depends on her voice. But the challenge in this case was trying to make the words work as they should with a person who is unable to say the words correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to say that voiceover work really can give you some big challenges. Any looping, of course, any time where you're throwing in English for foreign language, it's very challenging. It takes tremendous focus with you just in that booth watching the screen.
Right, right. It's, you know, again, we have our producer, Tom Hsu, is a professional voiceover artist, and he's writing down notes now. So
I got to tell you, I have met so many people at groups that are learning to do voiceover, and almost all of them dream of doing what you do. I know I sure do.
Oh, thank you. It's been a joy, a fulfillment, and I'm still at it. I still do narration through my website and some producers that I know. And I just enjoy it very much.
And that website is shannonferrin.com. Another question comes to mind.
Excuse me. I'm going to give you the correct pronunciation.
Please.
It's Farnan.
Farnan. Thank you.
It's an Irish name.
I should know that.
That's all right.
You had some young children then. You probably became a celebrity to them, being the voice of Wonder Woman back in the 70s.
You know, you would think so, and I had many questions about that, but my children just knew me as Mommy. I took them with me to the studio a couple of times for the Super Friends show because they were able to sit in the booth and not disturb anyone. It didn't mean much. I think later in their lives, they became more impressed than they were when they were children, because if it came up in some version or some way and they were asked about me, it was sort of like, oh, yeah, that's my mom.
I was reading on an interview you did previously. You're still getting fan mail today based on your creation of Wonder Woman. Does that feel good to still be recognized for that role? I know that a lot of actors, actresses, or journalists, you know, they do a lot of great things, and sometimes they get recognized, or sometimes something that they thought was a flash in the pan or something they didn't want to be remembered for. Are you happy being known, you know, primarily for Wonder Woman? I'm guessing so, because your site has Wonder Woman all over it.
Yes, how did you know? You know, I think it's such an unusual thing to have in your life. As I said, I was never heading in that direction. But you would not believe the wonderful fans that I have. They send me posters with notes, and it's just so nice to know that you have brought that kind of joy into somebody's life and that they may have watched you as children and are now listening to you as adults. And it's just, you know, who could possibly dislike it?
You know, I have some audio real quick, if you don't mind. I have some audio from your I Dream of Jeannie episode from the 60s. Well, I'm going to play that in here, too.
Sure. Because I have nothing but food.
Oh, God. What'd you bring?
Well, I have a little chicken and a little sandwiches and fruit. Well, you see this chicken.
Come here, we are.
Is there any left?
What?
Orange juice.
Oh, sure.
May I?
Oh, Jeannie's ambushing a nice lunch you and Larry Hagman are having.
Yes. Yes. He was quite a man to work with. A very, very talented man. Very funny. I wound up buying his station wagon and his tent trailer for my family to go camping.
Well, that's a story. You drove Larry Hagman's, J.R. Ewing's vehicle. And when you,
I bought it.
when you did Dallas years later, did you work with Larry again?
I didn't work with Larry then.
But you did do Dallas.
No, I did Dallas, but I didn't. He and I didn't work opposite each other. I mean, that happened, you know.
Well, at least you were on the same show twice. The website again, ShannonFarnan.com. Did I get that right this time?
Farnan.
Don't worry.
Yes, like
I'll make sure he remembers.
We really appreciate your time today. And again, Super Friends is on DVD. And you are watching Super Friends occasionally, right? I read somewhere you actually are watching this cartoon now, 30 years later.
Well, I have them in my computer. So when the grandchildren are around, then I watch it with them.
Well, it's been a real honor. And I have to say, you're one of the first first women I ever saw on TV, even in animated form, and one of my favorite shows of all time. So it's a real honor for me, and I'm real excited. I try to be so unaffected in these interviews, but this is one where I'm really excited about talking to you today.
Oh, you're very sweet, and it's really been my pleasure, Tom. Both Toms, my pleasure.
Believe me, my pleasure too.
And real quick, you do voiceovers for voicemail messages and other voiceover work off your website. If people want to get in touch with you or different kinds of products you provide, they can go to
ShannonFarnan.com. Couldn't be easier.
Have a great day.
And you too. It's a pleasure. Bye-bye.
We'll be back after this on Flashback Twin Cities here on KLDB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here for our final segment of the show, and our guest is Tom Hendrick. Tom, welcome.
Thank you.
And Tom, you are in Washington, D.C., correct?
I am, yes.
And how is the weather there today?
Oh, I haven't been out. It's better than it is in Minneapolis, I'm sure.
Well, that is a fair assessment, but it's it's some snow flurries and flakes.
It's warmer than that here.
Yeah, well, but that's fine. We're gonna get through.
He's hiding his jealousy, Tom. Yeah,
exactly.
Don't you worry.
Well, actually, I still prefer Minneapolis.
Well, we appreciate that. Is the weather in D.C. the chilling effect from the government shutdown gone yet, or are you still feeling that chill?
We're still feeling that chill. Actually, we were just having a meeting about that. We're feeling it. We had one of the things that we do is we train, and we had some work with the Secret Service that was canceled, and then that was sequestered out, and we still have these other contracts that they have been delinquent in paying. We're a small business, and so they're supposed to pay in 15 days rather than, you know, at 30.
Right.
But they, you know, if they're late in paying, and you call them and raise Cain about it, they don't come back to you the next time.
You know what I always find funny, and our guest today, Tom Hendrick, and we don't really do a politics show, but this is a little bit of reality here, is when you don't pay the government on time, there's a lot of fees involved with that, you know, that late fee. But if the government doesn't pay you on time, well, that's just how it is.
Well, that's the way it is with us. I mean, you know, one time with a client, actually before sequester, I did call them. I even actually sent them a copy of the OPM directive that specified payment to small businesses within 15 days.
Right.
And we got paid, but we didn't get the and they liked what we did, but we didn't get another contract. So.
Well, let's hopefully.
That's the way it is. I think that, you know, in many ways, the working with the government is pretty much the same as just more red tape.
Right. You know, and it used to be a pretty safe bet, and I think right now, just the volatile nature of our politics, whether it be local or national, it's something we're going to have to get used to. You worked as a journalist in Minnesota in 1977, correct, when you started here?
Well, 1975 to 1980, either 82 or 83.
Which is a long run for anyone coming to Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of
and
one.
It was a great place, WCCO. You know, when I left WCCO for New York and CNN, and you know, of course, I thought that everything was going to be upward and bigger and better and that kind of thing. But looking back on my career, 30 years, I would say the most fun I had and the most journalistically sound operation was WCCO, no question.
Well, let's talk about that. Tell me about your journey here. How did you end up with a job at CCO?
I was working at a TV station in Roanoke and did a documentary on child abuse, and that got the interest of More on Sunday producers who liked it and asked me to come up there for a job interview. I'd never been to Minneapolis before, and a story I'll tell about Minneapolis is that, I mean, you know, I'm a southerner, basically. I'd lived in the South all my life. And when I came up there and, you know, I drove by a lake, like Lake of the Isles or something like that, and then I took the job, and then I drove by it a couple of months later, and it was frozen solid.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That sounds about right.
It was. There were a number of eye-openers like that. I still remember some of the stories that I did up on Lake Mille Lacs when they had the ice fishermen and the ice houses and the streets and the street signs and the people
sure.
having the ovens in their ice houses and still having to use whatever to break the ice so they could do fishing and stuff like that. It was really good memories. But CCO was a great place to work. It was a special time in my life. We just had this reunion to commemorate the life of a guy named Mike Sullivan.
Mm-hmm.
Who was left CCO. I worked with at CCO, and then he went on to Frontline, and I think it was Frontline in Boston. It was either Frontline or Nova. I can't remember. He died, and a bunch of us got together, sort of a reunion a couple of weeks ago, and I equate that to getting together. There was an anniversary of my social fraternity. And it was very similar to that. I mean, people who I hadn't seen in 30 years. And it was like we had just gotten together yesterday. It was really wonderful.
No, that's a good thing.
The guy who was the news director, a guy named Ron Hanberg, was really, and I told him when I was up there, I wanted to tell him that he was the best news director I ever had. He was sort of the conscience of the community. And it was a time in broadcasting when you didn't necessarily have to make a buck for the news department. I think the news department was a lost leader, if you will. And it was the news department was there because of the image that rather than today, where at CNN and Fox and other places where I've worked, they're more concerned about Well, they have to be. It's a lot more competitive. They have to make money. And but for a number of reasons, I was also at CCO during the days when we were still shooting some stories on film. And so it takes longer to develop. It takes longer to shoot. We could go out and spend, even after videotape came in, we could go spend 2 or 3 days or more on a story, and especially in this, when we would rotate into the special projects unit, which was, I think, later called the I-team.
I-team. Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, you didn't have, you went after the story, and you didn't have a gun to your head to get it.
No, I think that, correct me if I'm incorrect, but it was a time, you know, the 70s, 80s was a time of TV news. Our guest today, Tom Hendrick, before sales really drove news product. I mean, it always has to a point. You need people to watch your product to be able to be sustainable. But when Ron Hamburg, as a journalist, you know, we actually had Ron Hamburg on about 3 weeks ago, Tom, about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, about 3 or 4. He was a great, amazing guy.
A great guy to have interviewed. And he, you know, he came in from, you know, from the journalism program at the University of Minnesota, CCO Radio, CCO TV. Now, and that's not to say that what's better or worse or what is, but a lot of leadership and management in corporate-owned stations, networks, comes from sales and marketing or from programming. And it's a very different mentality on what your product is. Tom, it had been a great thing. You know, you as a young guy, you're at CCO TV, and you went to Washington, D.C. to, you know, follow Minnesota farmers, which at the time, it's hard to believe now with the way farming has kind of gone, it's gone very corporate, but there was a great number of years where farming was a real crisis, and Minnesota was still a very much agricultural state.
Right. Yes. I mean, I spent probably at least half of my career doing stories in the farm country, including probably the most long-lasting story was the power line controversy. They were putting up a 400,000 volt DC power line, and the farmers were really opposed to it. They opposed it legally and then physically. And after it got built, they may have even knocked some of them over. So it was a continuing story for several years. So I was down in the farm country a lot, and of course that brought me to Washington. And I came to Washington after I'd been I left CCO to go to Minneapolis. I'm sorry, to go to New York with CNN. Then I went to Beirut, Lebanon, with CNN, and between CNN and Fox, I spent a lot of time, basically nearly 20 years in the Middle East.
Let's talk about that a second.
A couple of times and everything.
That's a big difference from going from the farm country Minneapolis to Beirut in the 80s. That's at a certain point, did you think I really could be going reporting on the farm issues of the day in a grain field versus being here in the Middle East?
Actually, I enjoyed all the spot news stories, you know, just like I did. And I enjoyed the farm. It was fun doing the farm stories, especially when things were happening, when there was a protest or something like that. And I sort of equate that. It's very much the same as spot news in the Middle East, in Beirut or Baghdad or Haiti, because you go to something because that's your job, and so there's not the fear that you would think would be there is not there. It would be there now because I'm older, looking back on things with experience.
But that's a good question. I do ask reporters occasionally. I say, you know, were you ever afraid? Most of them say they never were. You know,
no.
Sometimes they're afraid at the airport, where they go into the airport with film or with some video, thinking it's going to be confiscated because they've done a lot of work and that's going to be removed. From what kind of reporting you did you ever have a moment where you thought this is really going to be, you know, this is going to be a dangerous
yes.
time right now?
Yes, I did. There were times in Beirut. An interesting little story. There was a guy who was with me, a cameraman from South Africa. He and I were working together. We were down on the Green Line in Beirut, and a rocket-propelled grenade exploded nearby and blew us over the concussion of the rocket-propelled grenade, sort of blew us over a car. It's sort of like if you're standing on the beach in a hurricane and you feel the grains of sand hitting you, you know, in the face. And I was terrified. But you look and see what everybody else is doing to decide whether to, you know, fight or flight. I watched what the other people were doing and did what they did because that's what you had to do to survive. Later in the bar, we went up to the bar and I was just with talking to this South African cameraman, and he was describing what it felt like to him. I mean, again, it scared the hell out of me. But I looked at him and he said to me, I'll never forget, he said, "It was magic, mate."
Oh.
So
magic's that's a way of putting it.
Yes. And he had this, you know, this sort of special gleam in his eyes that I will also never forget. I think you do things in the news business, whether it's covering a power line protest or a fire or a police event. And you go there sort of, that's your assignment. And then once you get there, I think you are basically you are two eyes of four. In other
right.
words, you're watching out for your camera crew, and you're watching out for him, and you're in the moment. You know, what do I need to get record on this story? And so you really don't have time to be afraid. I was afraid, but I did what I had to do.
You're doing a job. I mean, you're doing a job, and you're trying to, number one, to do well by your viewer, your product, and your employer. So there's time to be afraid. It's just not at that time. And then if you actually sat and thought about it long enough, which I'm guessing if you're in Baghdad or if you're in Beirut, you're just looking at what's going on right now. You rationalize all these things later, I'm guessing, of like, okay, this was really a dangerous spot. I shouldn't have done that, or I was here, and this happened a mile from me. That's what I take from it. I'm not.
Well, there were a couple of times when I was in Beirut, for example, that I slept in my bathtub because there was shelling, and you couldn't see where the shelling was coming. You could just hear it getting louder.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were a couple of times where you take a precaution like that.
Now, did you go to Baghdad during the first or second Gulf War, or both?
First.
Okay.
Twice.
And that was a time when Americans were not—we weren't really welcome there in Baghdad at that point. We had not even rolled into Baghdad. We were in Kuwait.
Well, we were in Kuwait, but we were also the reporters did go to Baghdad. You know, we had the sign on the top of the car said press, so we wouldn't be shot at by our own troops. And I was there, and there were a bunch of people there. John Holloman with CNN, he later died in a car accident in Georgia going out to get milk. He had been, you never know when it's going to happen. Holloman and I too, but Holloman in particular had been in a lot of very extremely dangerous circumstances. Never got hurt, and he got killed in a car wreck going to get milk for his kid.
There's some ironicities to that. People that have gone through so much, and that's also a rationalization you can make. I've asked people that have gone to the Middle East, have gone to South America, and we live in a certain amount of danger going across the street, much less going across countries. This can happen to any of us anytime.
I was also in Pakistan, and And when I was there, again, I would not go back to Pakistan now for all the money in the world, because I think things have changed. The feelings toward the United States and journalists have changed since the second Gulf
right.
War, Iraq War. You know, I was in Pakistan. I didn't feel under any danger. Maybe, you know, even though they would say things like, you have to get have an escort when you go out to take pictures, or you will be shot.
Right.
I sort of laughed that off. But again, it was that time. That was in the mid 90s.
Do you miss the reporting from foreign countries? Do you miss some of what you were doing years ago? I know you're doing media consulting right now, but do you, when you see stories on TV?
Occasionally. For example, when the Navy Yard shootings happened here, there's sort of an instinct, I sort of want to go down there and see what's happening.
Waiting for a phone call from someone to say, we need you and a photographer down there in 20 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, there's that impulse to, you know, you want to go down there. But at the same time, there's also a feeling that, because I know what comes with that. I know the follow-up story that comes with it. I know the stakeouts that come with it. I know that I'd be on that story for 6 months down at the Navy Yard and doing live shots all the time.
Our guest today, Tom Hendrick. Tom, you worked at CNN in its infancy, in its young days. You worked at Fox News in its early days, and now you're a media consultant, correct?
Well, we do video productions. I would call it training. There's actually a company in Minneapolis that we hope to work with that does training. It's more like online training, and it's like emergency responder training. We're not training people how to be firefighters, but we're training them how to, you know, what all the protocols are.
Sure.
And usually we put that online, and they take it, people take it as a course. And we also do train the trainer kind of thing. So it's I would put it mainly in the video production category. But it's different kinds of things. It's, you know, you will have a writer, a director, and a producer. Oftentimes the government will, these things will be written over a period. There will be content specialists in a particular field, like emergency responder training, who will be in on the phone calls, and we'll have conference calls, and people will be on the conference call from all over the country.
Do you have a website I can give out to the audience here at KLBB?
I'm sorry?
A website I can give out to the audience here at KLBB?
Oh, yes. www.zhmworks.com.
Great. Well, Tom, it's been great hearing from you. Do you get inquiries from people from Minneapolis occasionally, or weren't you the guy that used to be on Channel 4?
You know, no, I don't...
Besides me? Okay.
I don't get that.
You might
that
now
would
because...
be nice. Actually, I'm going to get together with a member of Congress from Minnesota, and he was in Congress years ago, and I'm going to try to get together with him again because he's back in Congress now, and actually I was going to show him this that Faith, Hope, and Parody video.
Tom, okay. thank you for being our guest today on Flashback Twin Cities. You can see Tom Hendrick's work on tcmedianow.com. Tom, best of luck to you, and I'm glad that Washington's back to work now, and I'm sure things will go better for you.
Well, thanks so much, and again, I only lived up there 8 years, but I consider Minnesota home and still root for the Vikings.
We appreciate that. Hey, they need a lot of rooting right now. It's been a rough year for us.
They do.
Tom, thank you.
My pleasure.
Tom Hendrick, thank you. Our other guest, Sharon Farnan, thank you again. Flashback Twin Cities, we'll be back next Saturday here on KLBB Club 1220.